We are continuing in the 11th parak of Maseches Yesharim in the Pratim Yidus Hanakius. The Ramchal discussed kina, jealousy, and now he gets to the end of the bad character traits that were the main bad character traits that we have to watch out for. The Sira ki achos hakina hiachem de v'hataiva. You will see that the sister of kina is chemda and taiva. Chemda and taiva refer to desires, lusts. They weary the heart of man till his dying day. A person doesn't die and achieve half of what he desires. Now, essentially, people's desires open into two channels, two directions. One is for money and financial gain. The second is for honor and prestige. They're both horrible. The goyim, the adam, rabos, and cause all kinds of problems. The desire for money or greed binds a person in the bonds of the world, and shackles and chains him for toil and business. Like it says, Ohev kesef lo yispa kesef, one who loves money will never have enough. He hamesira oso min avoid, it takes him away from avoid Hashem. Kama tefilos nevados, how many tefilos are lost? Kama mitzvos neshkochos, how many mitzvos are forgotten? Vipnei rov ha'esig v'gias ha'mon haschera, because he's so busy trying to earn and become wealthy. Koshken tama turn out to mention how much Torah he misses out on. Ukvar avu chazal, chazal teach us lo me'ev le'yam hi, it's not beyond the sea, ba'os m'sholcha me'ev le'yam b'schera, Torah is not found me'ev le'yam. It's not found by those who travel great distances to become wealthy. We also learn that one who is involved in business too much will not become wise in Torah. Not only that, it delivers him into all kinds of dangers. And it weakens his energy with all his concerns. Even after he's achieved plenty, he's still anxious and nervous. Like we learned, the more you have, the more you're concerned about it. The drive to earn will take him against many mitzvahs of the Torah, even on things that are naturally rational and required by the Seichel. That's for money. How money, greed, will drive a person to miss davening, to not learn, to miss out on mitzvahs, to be cruel, to do things that you shouldn't normally do, besides bittul Torah. And on top of that, even more than that, is chemdas hakavod, the desire for honor. Perhaps you could control your yetzer, your inclination, for financial wealth, al shahanos, and other pleasures. Achakavod hu adochek, but it's the pursuit of honor that pressures you. Ki yashalo lisbol v'lirosis atzmo pachas mechaverv, because he can't bear it. He can't bear to see that he's less than his friends and neighbors. Valdovaz en nichshalu rabbe v'nevadu, because of this, many stumbled and were lost. Hine, take for example, Yerav ben Nevat, at one time was a tzaddik. He lost his olam haba for one reason, his desire for honor. Grabbed hold of his cloak and said, do tshuva. Together, I and you and David will walk in Gan Eden. Amarlo. Yeravim says to Hashem, "Me berosh, but who's going to walk first?" Amalo ben Yishai berosh. David's going to go first. Amalo yachilo bein. If that's the case, I'm not interested. Me gam lo kairach sheyayved. Who v'chal dasvimo? What caused kairach to be lost? He and all his group. Avnei hakavod. Mikamoli, it's a pasuk. Ubi kashtim gam kahuna. You're not happy with your position as levim. You also want kahuna. V'chacham zal he gidulonu ki kol zeh nimshach mei shiroi litzaf min uziel nasi. And Chazal teach us this all came because Koyrach saw Elitzaf ben Uziel appointed Nasi. For Hayarot al Yosu Nasi become, he wanted to be the Nasi. Who Shagram lefidas achaminas al Meraglim? Covered according to our Chazal is what brought about the Chet of the Meraglim. She had seen Diba la Oretz to speak poorly about Eretz Yisrael. The Gomma Misalahem with Chol Daram, causing death to themselves and their generation, Meirasam, because of their fear. That they may not be on the same level when they go into Eretz Yisrael. So you haim nisiim liyisrael. They won't be the nisiim then. The amdu achirim will come, others will take their place. This is a zar kadosh that the meraglim knew that if they go to Eretz Yisrael, they will no longer be nisiim, and that's what motivated them to keep Klai Yisrael out of Eretz Yisrael. Al mo hischel Shaul le'erov el David, and what caused Shaul to be an enemy of and wait an ambush for David? I mean, that covered, again, it's covered. Shenemar, what happened? The women would say out loud when they would rejoice, from that day on, Shaul kept an eye on David because they said that David kills the 10,000, whereas Shaul only kills the thousands. What caused Yoav to murder Amos in cold blood? And that covered. It was covered. Shamalo David. David said to Amos, you'll be the general from now on, not Yoav. Yoav murdered him. The rule is as follows. There's nothing more powerful to motivate and pressure a person in the world than covet. It's a fascinating line. Ramchal says, more than kinna, more than taiva, covet is what drives people more than anything else. Lule zef, wouldn't be for covet. People would be happy to eat whatever there's available. Lubash mashi chaser vaso, bare clothing just to cover himself. His home is assessed to be sufficient to protect him, shelter him. His panasa would be very easy. He wouldn't have to toil to become wealthy. But because he doesn't want to see himself less than his friends and neighbors, he puts himself right into the thick of things. There's no end to his toil. These three character traits, jealousy, desire, and the pursuit of covet, take a person out of this world. And they warn us, don't pursue greatness, don't desire honor. How many people are suffering hunger and supported by charity, because they refuse to engage in work that'll pay a salary, but it's not a good enough job for them. They're afraid that will diminish their covet to take such a job. Is there anything more silly than that? They'd rather sit idle, which brings to stagnation, and other bad things like snus and stealing. They call gufi averus, all kinds of averus. Because they don't want to minimize their imagined stature. Who always guide us and direct us in the ways of the truth. They say, Ahev es hamalacha, you should love the labor. Usnas rabbanus, forget about, hate positions of authority and stature. V'amo, they say further, peshot nevel to beshuka, rather be one who skins animals in the market, which is a very low job, evidently. For though tamer, and not say gavarabhano, I'm a big person, I can't take that job. Kahana anam a kohen, it's beneath my dignity take such a job. That's terrible. A person should take any job, even if he's not familiar with it, and not have to rely on charity. One of the biggest stumbling blocks that people confront is kavod. There is no way to be a true, trusted servant to his master, his maker, if he's worried about his own kavod. He will certainly have to minimize kavod shemayim because of his foolishness of his own kavod. This is what David said, I'll make myself even less and be lower my eyes. What is true kavod? It's one who truly knows Torah. The only kavod is Torah. The kavod of chachamim is what you should inherit. Without that or anything else, it's just imaginary, false kavod. It's nonsense. It's nothing there. It's worthless. For hanaki, if you're going to be a person who's considered naki, it's proper. To be totally free of this, and then will be successful. I included here many details of Nikias. It's a template. All the mitzvahs, and character traits. The wise will listen and add, and the one who understands will prepare stratagems how to achieve this. I can't deny. There's going to be a degree of difficulty and labor to reach this level of Nikias. Afal pikin, nonetheless, I say, shein soch kol kach, it's not that hard. That's you might think. The thought is actually more difficult than the deed. If you take it to heart, you want to acquire this trait of Nikias, with a little practice and making it a habit, it'll become much easier to acquire than he could have imagined. And this is something that experience proves out to be true. That's the end of this parak. So the Ramchal writes that one of the greatest difficulties to overcome to be a naki is the pursuit of kavod. There are several major motivations in a person's life. There's taivis, there's chemdas, and there's kina, like we talked about last time. But ultimately, kavod, he says, trumps them all. Kavod overrides all the other motivators. And it's because of kavod that we insist on dressing the way we dress and drive the vehicles that we drive and live in the houses that we live. And then he goes on to decry how, when it comes to parnasa, there are people who will refuse to take a job that they feel is beneath their dignity. And ultimately, it's in your head, it's in his imagination. There's nothing beneath his dignity. The Chazal telling us, do anything, take any job, and not have to be a charity case. Unfortunately, there are many, many people who will not take jobs because they think it's beneath them. They won't even look at certain jobs because they feel it's not, no, that's not for me, I'm for a higher level. I don't know if it's the fellow who feels he has to be Rosh Hashiva, so he won't take a job in a high school. The fellow won't take a job in a high school, in elementary, because he wants to be in a high school, and on like that. Now, not everyone is fit for every job, but this imagined status that he has about himself should not interfere. It should not interfere with Panosa. And it's a very difficult design. This is what Chazal tell us about the story of Pesel Micha, that Micha found a Levi who was willing to be his kohen, and he was very excited. The Levi, according to Chazal, was Moshe Rabbeinu's grandson. Moshe Rabbeinu's grandson couldn't find a job. Now, maybe he could have found a job, but he felt these were beneath him. After all, I'm Moshe Rabbeinu's grandson. I'm a Levi. I should get a good job, not these low jobs. Maybe they wanted to make him a second grade rabbi. He said, that's not for me. I'm Moshe Rabbeinu's grandson. And he couldn't get something that suited his imagined status. So he's offered to be the chief rabbi of Pesal Micha, of Micha's temple. And he's going to get an allowance for clothing, and he's going to get free room and board. And I said, this is a good deal. This is a good deal. He took the job. And then people would see him and recognize him. What are you doing here? He said, it's a good job. It's Parnosa. He didn't believe in it. He didn't believe in the Avodah Zarah. He didn't worship the Avodah Zarah. He went ahead and he took whatever offerings and he kept for himself, whatever it is. But he had a good job. He refused to take anything else. So there's a nusach in the Chazal that eventually they got him out of there and gave him some kind of job and that he shouldn't stick around the Pesal Micha. But the moral of the story is, you don't take such a job just because you're Moshe Rabbeinu's grandson. There's nothing that's beneath my dignity and therefore I can't take it. There were Talmidim of the European yeshivas who came to the United States. Tremendous Talmidei Chachamim. Tremendous Talmidei Chachamim. They could not find jobs. They could not find jobs. They wanted to be Rabbonim. They couldn't find. There weren't enough shuls. There weren't enough places. And unfortunately, many of them went to conservative temples. They became conservative rabbis. These were Talmidim of the finest yeshivas of Europe. The finest yeshivas of Europe. And the conservative movement in America was more than happy to accept them. Did a chashuv job, a chashuv salary, and some of them taught in JTS, in their seminary. These were people who grew up from Erlich, yeshivalite, and they had no parnosa. And what was offered to them was beneath them. They don't want something less than who they are. They had this idea of who they were. And they, some of them, like I said, were big time to come. So they took jobs by conservative. Very few have Jewish, forget religious, great grandkids. Even if they themselves stayed Orthodox, which isn't clear that all of them did. By their children who grew up in the conservative temple, they weren't. By the grandchildren, for sure they weren't. By the great-grandchildren, I think most of them aren't, a lot of them, not say most. Unfortunately, a lot of them aren't Jewish anymore. It's a terrible tragedy. These are big Talmidei Chacham from the big yeshivas. And it was the ones who came from those yeshivas who did not fall into the trap. So they couldn't get a job. They couldn't get a job at the Rabbanus. They couldn't get a bigger yeshiva. They couldn't get a job. So they wanted something else. They started working. So the ones who said, Peshot Nevel to the Beshuka, they went to work. They got some kind of job. Even though they're huge in the Chamim, they very much looked down on their Chaverim and Chavusas who went the other way. They went off to these conservative temples. And it was a sad reality that they were really scholars. They were real Talmidei Chachamim, some of them. And they just went and strengthened the conservative movement at that time. It was a shame. It was a shame. And the ones who were Erlich wouldn't touch it with a 10-foot pole. So they had a job. They opened the store, whatever they had to do. They had to do what they had to do. Despite the fact that they knew so much Torah, okay, so didn't work out for them to get a job that was proper for them. So they didn't take the job. They did anything else. But there were those who felt, no, I can take the job. It served them. It's okay. I remember one time when I was a bacher, there was a fellow who came to the yeshiva for Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. He was hired as a chazan or a cantor at a conservative temple, which was 2 blocks away from the yeshiva. Today, this conservative temple is a frum shul. The community just grew and grew and grew, and the conservative disappeared, and the shul, today there's minyanim around the clock. It's like the minyan factor of that community. But when I was a bacher in yeshiva, that building, which today is a frum shul, back then was a conservative temple. So here this fellow, he's staying in the yeshiva. I believe he's a from Yid. We all assume he's an Erlich Yid. He arranges to stay, to eat, to sleep at the yeshiva. But he's going davening in the conservative temple. What's he doing in the conservative temple? Panosa. He's a cantor. And Paris asked to daven Yom HaRoyim. And he didn't find something in the Orthodox world, in the firm world. So good, so good, a conservative. It's terrible. So he spends Yom HaRoyim with the conservatives, I'm sure with a microphone, and I doubt any mechitza, because he's a cantor. He's got it down for the Yomid. That's what he got to do. It's a tragedy. It's a tragedy. What's he doing? Because he holds himself. He's a chazen. That's it. So that's what you do. So you go daven a conservative temple. So that's this nisayon. That's this nisayon that they weren't willing to take other types of jobs that were beneath their imagined position in life of who they were. You know, by the non-Jewish world, I don't know if it's such an issue. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. There are plenty of people with college degrees working at jobs they don't need a college degree for because they can't find work. I know recently there was a lawsuit brought by a lawyer who graduated, I believe it was University of Detroit, if that's what it's called, law school downtown. And he sued the school because the school advertises that 90%, 80% of the graduates, or 90% of graduates, find work when they graduate. And here he's working at McDonald's, 2 years out of law school, and the only job he can get is working at McDonald's. He has all this debt from law school, and he can't get a job as a lawyer, and he's working, he sued the school. It's false advertising. And the school's answer was, we're not false advertising. We're saying 90% of our graduates get jobs. We didn't say they become lawyers. They never said, we guarantee that you'll get a job as a lawyer. We just said, you'll get a job. And 90% do get jobs. So, this is true. In any event, there is this concept, again, you go to school, you get your degree, and then what do I do with it? So ultimately, you got to get a job. If you can't get a job in the field that you like, then get a job. So I think they're less machbit about this among the non-Jewish world or the secular world. But it's, so, the concept is there. You go ahead and you work at something. So if you can't get a job in the field that you would like, so what are you going to do? You're going to starve? You got to work. So you got to find a job. And there are many college grads working at jobs that don't need college education today. So I'm not saying it's not a problem, but I'm just saying this idea that this is beneath my COVID, it may be something we're more sensitive to, maybe. The issue, of course, isn't only as far as parnasa and jobs. There are cases when maybe it's wrong to take a certain job, like I said, with the case of conservative. Maybe an environment is not a good environment at a certain job, so then it's not good that it takes such a job if the environment is inappropriate. That's something that has to be figured out as well. But the bottom line is, how much do we make our decisions based on what other people are going to say about us? That's the bottom line here. Kinna is one side of the coin. I want to be like someone else. And if I don't want to be like someone else, I don't have that, how worried am I about what other people are going to say about me? And that's the other half of it. And that's what it's talking about over here. How I dress, how I conduct myself, my home, my car, how much of it is driven by what other people will say. A woman called me up very upset. It's not the first time I heard this, but it was just last night. But I've heard it before. How exactly am I supposed to keep the mitzvah of covering my hair when the cost of wigs is outrageous? And on top of that, I've had very bad experiences when something isn't done right by the Shaita Macher and there's no recourse. So you end up upset, you put all this money into this investment, and then you're not even happy with how it comes out, which is not an uncommon problem. I was told there's an entire Beis Din that only deals with wig problems in the East Coast. So this is an issue. So I kind of wonder, how did this happen? I really couldn't help this lady. I felt terrible. It's not like I could do for her. I said, you want to wear a tichel? I can walk out of the house with a tichel. I'm not going out of the house. If I lived in Israel, I'd go with a tichel. If I don't live in Israel, I can't go out with a tichel. There's got to be another solution. I don't have another solution for you. You know, she's not going to wear an inferior wig, and she's not going to wear a tichel. And I told her she has to cover her hair. So I don't have a solution. But I'm curious how much of this is driven by what other people are doing. People weren't always wearing these wigs. If you look at pictures of your mothers and their wedding albums and the people, they weren't wearing the wigs they wear today. They weren't. They were not spending that kind of money on wigs. And maybe there were yechidim who did, but it wasn't typical. And today it's like you have to. I remember a number of years ago, a former student was moving to a community after her chasna, and she was asking, should she invest in these expensive wigs? She felt like, it's a waste of money. And I told her, if everyone in your community is going to wear that, in your school, wherever she's working, then you may have to be like everyone else. But the bottom line is, how much of this is driven by this element? And I think there are plenty of women who would be happy to move the clock back. It could be the wigs today are more comfortable, that might be, than the ones of yesteryear. But it's a source of great, angst, upset for many, many, many women of what's going on in the world today with wigs. And again, some of it must be driven by everyone's doing it. It's like, what are they going to say about me how can I walk out of the house looking different from everyone else, basically? So that's an issue. It's an issue. I think it's the same with men's hats, too, for that matter. Bar mitzvah boys' hats, how much they're spending on these hats today, it's outrageous. It's outrageous. What drives it? Because everyone else does it. How can I be different than everyone else? If everyone goes like that, I have to do that too. So on the one hand, it could be it's covered, which is Dorchik Leifa Adam Yes Mikola Chuga Khanshwa, or it could simply be you have to be a mensch. And we can't, we're not on the Madrega to let people say things about us and we're not holding by that. So a lot of it is driven by that. De Vilna Gaon already wrote that he was concerned with his daughters going to shul. What will the ladies comment about their clothing? Are they going to be forced to wear certain clothes because that's what people are going to expect of them or make comments to them if they're not dressing the way the other ladies are dressing? This goes back over 200 years, this kind of concern. So it's there. It exists. And I think the best we could do is to try as much as possible not to get caught up in it. It happens to be that in our community, we are blessed. That's much less than other places. I only heard recently complaints that why are elementary school kids wearing $70 Italian shoes? Where'd that come from? Why would an elementary kid need a $70 pair of shoes? That's ridiculous. I think they're right. It is ridiculous. So the question is, how much do we buy into it? There are some people doing it, so do we just say, that's ridiculous, we're not going to buy into it? Or once one or two or three kids have it, then four or five, six kids have it, the next thing you know, everyone has to have it. Same kind of thing again. So, for the most part, we're pretty good about it. It used to be and to a great extent it still is, the beauty of our community, I've heard this from some great people, was that the wealthiest members of the community lived in the simplest houses. Marvin Berlin and Oliver Shalom had a house that looked no different than anyone else's. Maybe inside, it was different. But the outside of the house, you would never know that that was where Marvin Blinn lived. In Denver, Sheldon Baron lived in the house next to the Rashiv of a kid. Couldn't tell the difference, two houses, exact same house. Nothing built up around, nothing. Regular house. Regular house like anyone else. That's a beauty in a community when the Gevirim don't feel compelled to build up and out, and everyone should notice that that's different, and then because that makes a pressure on the other people. And for a lot, our community is blessed that we really don't have that. It's changing. It is being observed that it's beginning to change. But for a long time, it wasn't that way. And it's part of keeping everything at base. And this idea of the drive of kavod should not surface when the people of means don't show it ostentatiously, so to speak. And therefore, it keeps everything on a simpler level. And it is one of the beauties of the community in which we live.